Hello there, and welcome to Arcadia. This is Chris Marcus here, founder of Arcadia Economics, and I'd like to thank you, as always, for joining me. Another great show in line for you today. And on this one, we are going to dig into the gold market yet again. Although we're going to look at something that you won't traditionally hear much about in the American mainstream media. Well, for the most part, you don't hear all that much about gold in general in the American mainstream media because it's, for a variety of reasons, often just not covered. And certainly if you were just reading some of the regular news and trying to understand why you've seen such a massive decline in gold and silver, although just for this particular time being, we'll stick to gold. And again, thinking about how over this past year, you saw the price of gold go down significantly. It ended the, I think it was 11 or 12 year run of gold going up year after year until this past year in 2013 when it pretty much got hammered pretty solidly. And that's certainly been confusing for a lot of people because they see that, well, there's more money printing than ever, so certainly the conditions that one would expect for gold to perform well in have been there. And as we've documented on Arcadia Economics and in some of the other podcasts, the main reason for that is that there has been a lot of manipulation in the gold and silver markets. Again, for some people, that is so contrary to what maybe they're used to thinking that it often seems hard to believe. Of course, you really don't have to look any farther to the fact that the government's were globally coordinating a manipulation of the gold market back in the late 60s. It was known as the London Gold Pool. Of course, we can look at the other current asset markets. We see that the banks, well, what have they gotten caught manipulating in the past couple of years alone? There's LIBOR, the foreign exchange markets. The Fed openly manipulates the U.S. bond market. I think there was also the copper, aluminum, energy, some of the other power markets. It's actually harder to find a market that hasn't been manipulated than one that has, and certainly the gold market is no different. And there was a story that I read about a week ago that I found pretty interesting that covered some of the things that have been going on in India regarding gold. Now, maybe you already know, or maybe this is the first time you're hearing, but the Indians have traditionally and culturally been massive gold buyers. Gold plays a much different role in the Indian culture than it does in the U.S., and certainly India is actually, for a long time, was the largest consumer of gold. That recently changed I believe it was this past year when China has finally overtaken India as the largest gold buyer. But India is still consuming a large amount of gold, and perhaps one of the factors that allowed the Chinese to overtake them this year were a lot of the restrictions that the Indian government was placing on its own people. There were some quotas basically saying that you can't import over this much amount of gold, and a lot of other restrictions that essentially gave the Indian people less supply to meet their demand. So the next question would be, well, why would they do that? When you think about it, what would be the purpose of saying it's illegal to own so much gold, or it's illegal to bring gold in? Why? You know, in today's culture, we've almost gotten used to the way in which governments just say this is illegal, that's not illegal, without actually thinking about the reasons behind it. And, well, the official reason that I've heard stated a couple times from the Indian government was that this is somehow protecting the value of their currency and in response to a current account deficit, which really, in actuality, makes very little or no sense at all. That's essentially the argument they're making, is that their currency is being weakened because people are buying gold, which is equivalent to saying that it started raining because I took my umbrella out, when in actuality, I took my umbrella out because I looked outside the window and saw that it was raining. The fact that someone takes their money and says, I'm going to buy a yellow piece of metal, has nothing to do with the fact that the Indian currency is struggling. In fact, the reason the Indian currency is struggling is because the Indian government and central bank, like all the other governments and central banks, are printing the currency. The people see this. They realize that as the supply is being increased, the demand is going to go down, and they're looking for alternatives. That's no different than what's been going on to some degree in the U.S., as certainly there has been a noticeable change that I would say I started to notice maybe somewhere in 2012, certainly continued over 2013, where people are starting to see what's going on. It's, when you think about it, after a while, if you just keep printing enough, and eventually it's not rocket science. If you're printing dollars, if you're printing the rupee, or if you're printing yuan or whatever it is, the people are going to see that the currency they're holding is becoming less valuable. And that's going to be natural human reaction, human nature, to go try and protect themselves, which, again, has historically, and in this case again, been gold and to some degree silver. And you've actually seen great increased demand. If you look at the amounts of gold that China's importing, if you look at the amount that, even with the restrictions that India's importing, and that doesn't count the unofficial number of how much is actually being smuggled in, because there's a lot of people who are a lot closer to the situation than I am that think that despite the attempts to restrict Indian people from buying gold, that it is still going on, and it seems like there's a lot of smuggling that's bringing gold into the country. So actually how much is going in, how much is being prevented from going in is hard to tell. Similarly with China, we have the officially stated numbers, although they're is a large degree within the gold community that those numbers are just showing a portion of what the Chinese are actually bringing in, because if you look at all of their actions, you see that, well, they don't let any of their domestic gold production out of the country. They're buying up mines around the world, and it's hard to know exactly how much they're bringing in, although it's seemingly in excess of what the Chinese government's reporting. And that's one of the things that makes the gold market so ripe for manipulation, is that there really is a lot of confusion or lack of clarity to the real data and where the metal's going, where it's coming from. If you just look at the publicly stated numbers and assume for a moment that they're correct, it's hard to see how the whole picture fits together, because at the same time that the price has dropped significantly, you're seeing more demand than supply is actually even available on the market. If you just add up the amount of gold that China and India, I think if you actually just looked at what China and India brought in last year alone, I think those two alone might actually exceed the global supply. Think about that. That just two, and it may be that they don't exceed or they're close, but I think they do actually exceed the global supply, which A, makes you wonder, well, where is the metal coming from, let alone the rest of the globe, when they're taking their portion, where is that coming from? But then on top of it, to see the price of metals fall in this environment, you know, it's another one of those things that, again, by itself, you need to investigate further. But when you start piecing together all these different bizarre oddities that seem to consistently pop up in the gold market, well, eventually you get a pretty clear picture, and it is a manipulated market. And, well, one of the best explanations that I've heard yet for why the Indian government would be trying to prevent their citizens from buying more gold was actually given by Eric Sprott of Sprott Global, who's certainly a lot closer to some of these situations than I am. And in his opinion, he felt that they were basically stiff-armed because they're buying so much gold, and the banks that have been manipulating the gold market are running out of ways to produce the physical gold. And so he believes that in some form or another, a conversation took place on the upper levels, which basically said, look, you got to stop these people from bringing in so much gold. Now, that's certainly an assertion. I can't call that fact. I don't think Eric Sprott attempted to call that fact either. But when we look at the things that are supposedly being presented as fact and see that largely they don't add up, well, we have to start looking to alternative explanations. And certainly that seems plausible enough to me because, again, going back to the reason that the Indian government states that this is going to somehow fix their trade imbalance is just illogical. In fact, I would argue over the past decade or so, or I guess it's 12 or 13 years now since the gold bull market began, that owning gold was the best thing that worked out from a financial investment standpoint for the Indian people. I mean, gold in 2001 was $200 or $300. Now, even with the decline over the past year, has hovered over around $1,200, $1,300. So the Indian people actually benefited quite substantially from the rise in gold. And to say that that's somehow causing the trade imbalance, it's the same brand of economics that Wall Street uses that often makes no sense. And there's a reason it makes no sense, because they're lying to you to take advantage of you. And how do we know this one with even more certainty to be true? Because recently, we found out that at the same time the Indian politicians are making it illegal for their citizens to buy gold, guess who's been loading up themselves? Yes, the same leaders and policymakers who are telling other people that they can't do it. Now, certainly if you're an American living in the U.S. and you've been following Congress for any period of time, seeing the policies of, hey, this is legal for you to do it, but now I'm going to go ahead and do it too, and I don't have to worry about any repercussions because I'm a government official. That part I'm starting to see as I travel more and more is actually more of a global phenomenon than just a U.S.-centric feature. But in either case, these are the clues that we have to look to and rationalize. It's unfortunate. We're not often given the straight facts and honest information and really a fair, objective view of how things are really working. But when you start to question the things that you hear and look behind them and see why someone might be saying what they're saying, think about, well, are the reasons that someone's providing, do they make logical sense? Which, again, in this case, with the Indian government, the reasons they're citing for actually placing the restrictions and quotas in the first place just being seemingly illogical, you start thinking a little deeper behind it. And is this by itself? Here's the way I like to look at it. Today, I didn't provide factual evidence. So when you're making your decision about how you feel about something, I would say in this case, this is more supporting evidence that can say, all right, there's something unusual here. It doesn't seem to make sense. I see parallels to other things that I've seen. Now I'm going to investigate farther. And you know, if you take a few steps ahead into the future and imagine you investigated farther and you see and start integrating all these other things that have been happening in the gold market, it starts to all come together, and then you form an opinion, and that's really the basis of developing the ability to start reading the fact from the fiction. Because unfortunately, as much as I wish this were so, and certainly this is what we try to provide at Arcadia, is really to finally give people a source of information that's not trying to do anything else except say, this is how the reality is. That's not trying to incentivize someone to do something that's going to leave them in a worse position than they were before. Unfortunately, that's not very common in today's media, which makes it more important than ever to, again, begin to develop the process and framework so that you can see through these things, understand what's going on, know how to tell the difference between what's real and what's not. And again, it all goes back to just looking at the different ideas and opinions that are presented, and then thinking logically through them, applying what you know, applying what you've seen, applying things that you know are fact, applying what you think is fact, applying things that maybe we thought were fact but aren't. But again, the benefit is that once you get into the habit of doing this, a lot of these things become very clear very easily. And when you start seeing that, well, the Indian government is telling its people one thing and then doing another, again, that really helps to put into perspective what's going on in the Indian market, how it fits with the rest of the market, and really to help you think of what's going to happen going forward, because the governments are going to continue to print a lot of money. And for reasons we've discussed before, they don't necessarily want people owning gold, because that's really the way that this scam is going to be ultimately exposed. But that doesn't mean that you have to be a victim of that. And if you keep doing your homework, staying objective, looking for facts, question the things you read, I would encourage you to question and double check the things that I say. Don't do something because I'm sitting here saying it. I'll introduce information to you, I will continue to do that, but then take this, match it against what you know, match it against the other sources of information you have, and quickly enough, you're going to be coming out well ahead of most of the rest of the investing public. So with that said, go out there and do your homework today. You're farther along than you realize. I want to thank you again for joining me, and we will see you again soon. Thanks.